Are you still getting book recommendations from TikTok? Well, you need to stop that immediately. There is a better way. There is a book which contains over 600 horror novel recommendations written by someone who has read over 3,000 horror novels. Let me repeat that. 3,000. I didn't even know there were 3,000 horror novels out there. That book is called Cracking Spines, Three Decades of Horror by Jason Cavallaro. Yes, he has been reading horror novels for longer than some of you have been alive. Cracking Spines has 37 chapters of ranked listings, including best monster novels, best folk horror, best slasher novels, and many more. But don't take my word for it. Horror's historian Mark Sieber says, "I don't care how much you know about horror fiction, you can learn from this book." Horror DNA's Tony Jones says, "Jason Cavallaro is a genuine horror expert. If you are looking for horror recommendations, there is no better place." Cracking Spines by Jason Cavallaro is available in both print and ebook at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And you know who else knows a thing or two about horror? That's right, Fangoria. They have been at it for over 40 years, and they are better than ever. This magazine, it's not only gorgeous, it's highly collectible and delivered right to your front door four times a year, each issue filled to the brim with articles exploring every nook and cranny of genre filmmaking, past, present, and future, with all the most exciting journalists, filmmakers, and horror know-it-alls to guide the way, including little old me from time to time. This high-quality writing will only ever appear within the physical pages of the magazine, never online, so if you want to join in on the fun, you're going to need to subscribe, and in order to do that, all you got to do is head on over to Fangoria.com and sign up. If you use the code KINGCAST at checkout, you will save a ginormous 25% off of your order. So that is Fangoria.com, code KINGCAST. Now on with the show.
Hi. My name is Stephen King.
He's gonna break!
Bedlam!
Bedlam! Sarah! You guys want to go see a dead body?
Well, sometimes that is better.
Welcome to the KingCast here on the Fangoria Podcast Network. I'm Anthony Bresnikan.
And I'm Eric Vespi.
And we are your hosts. Eric, it was a very happy day when I was invited to be on this show, when I was a mere listener out there in radio land or podcast land, and something similar is happening today with our guest. I got a message from a KingCast fan. That's always a great feeling when they have nice things to say. So far, I haven't heard anything negative, but it was not only somebody who was keen to be on the show, but happened to meet all of our criteria for an excellent guest. He works in a creative job. He has a deep connection to Stephen King, and he is damn fun to talk with, which leads us to our guest today, Cam Damage. Welcome to the KingCast.
What up? I'm like blushing and sweating already.
Yeah, you got some pressure on your shoulders now.
Yeah, you're here. You're at the big show, the big show.
It is.
Cam introduced himself to me this way in his first message, quote, "I am a 35-year-old trans dude who has worked mainly in the adult industry for about 15 years, although now I'm doing less performing and more often filming or editing them." Cam's letter went on, "More importantly, I'm a huge Stephen King fan. I collect as many of his books as I can, including different versions of the same books." I do that too. Specifically aiming to get as many Signet paperbacks and Viking hardcovers as possible. Let's just pause for a minute to say Signet paperbacks, I think, have the best
superior
covers. This the stand cover from the short version of the stand, you know, with the blue and the face and the crow. I've
also
not seen a better one.
The relief one, like the Salem's Lot relief face and the Shining mirror cover one, and like they're simple, but like the Firestarter one, Cujo, I don't know, they're the best.
Do they still stamp paperbacks so they have that bumpy like relief? Like that was such
No.
I feel like that stopped.
They also make them different material that feels kind of worse on your hands. Like, they're not like grippy. They're weird now. I don't know.
There was a great trend around that era. There's a book that I read. Matter of fact, a friend of mine bought the rights to it. He wants to make it into a movie called Sins of the Flesh. And it's kind of this shape-shifting serial killer story. But the cover is just like a cellar door, with a big crack in it, and there's a monster like looking through you just see like the eyeball through the crack, but you open the page and it's actually die cut the cover, and you open the cover and it's like you're opening the cellar door. So the art on the back side of the front cover is the back of the cellar door, and it's the monster's hand pushing it open when
Oh,
you
sick.
open the cover, and
That.
you get the full like look at this
That's
Wendigo thing. And I'm like,
the
there's some showmanship to that. That's some like Roger Corman,
They don't make them like they
William
used to.
They
Castle's
don't. That's
showmanship from the late 80s there.
what is it, Night Shift? The hand story. There's a like, signet cover where you open it and the hand bandages are revealed. Like the cover's black and just has the eyeballs.
Oh,
And then you open the cover and
yeah.
it's like, oh, it's so sick.
I don't think it was die cut, but my favorite of those. It's one, Eric, we talked about with King himself when he was on the show. In the paperback for Misery, when you opened it, it had that like sort of sad looking Paul, like in his wheelchair, all folded up with the shadow of Annie holding an axe looming over him. But when you opened it up, there was like a Harlequin style romance, like with a like a bodice ripper with this woman, and the dude, the really handsome, ripped like Fabio looking
Fabio.
dude, is Stephen King. Like it has Stephen King's face.
Oh,
Yeah.
what? Yeah, and it's so funny because he's still, I mean, I love the man. He's got a little bit of a goofy face. And he's a goofball. He's a goofy guy, right? He's just an average dude, and I love seeing like this is what happens when like the lottery hits, right? And you're like, you know what? I wrote this story. Can you put my face on Fabio's body? And
Why
it so it
not?
kind of looks like one of those theme park things where you go and like you get your head photoshopped on the like Luke Skywalker's head, and
Right.
your girlfriend or your mom or your sister is gonna
Or
be Princess Leia.
at the beach where you stick your face through that wooden cutout and it's like
Right?
the Muscle Man or the Bikini Babe,
Just like beaming.
But some artists actually painstakingly drew the handsome, because it's not just like Stephen King's face. I'm making a little bit of
He's
light of it.
idealized for
He
sure,
definitely he's got like chiseled features, but it's still very much Stephen King. I love that.
I need to look
We could
that
do
up.
it. I wonder if
I'll
we could.
send it to you, Cam. It's great. You'll love
We
it.
need to track down who that artist is. We need to see if that person's still around and wants to talk about that
Yeah,
process.
I'm on it. I
All
have
right.
a mission now. All right,
Good.
so a little more background on Cam.
Yes.
Cam has a lot going on here.
Oh, God.
Also, Cam tells me he collects VHS tapes of movies adapted from King, but also VHS in general, co-hosts YouTube series called Dungeon Crawler featuring rare and strange VHS finds. Your interest in VHS is really fascinating to me. And I don't want to talk about that as the show continues. But the last thing I want to mention, Cam was also the main monster in a movie called Extremity. It's from 2018, I believe, right? With
Yeah, is that
makeup
right?
effects by legendary madman Japanese makeup effects artist Yoshiro Nishimura, who you guys might know from Tokyo Gore Police. So you had the makeup done by an expert there. What did you look like? Give the listeners a description of your character.
One, the not to disparage the movie, if anyone goes and watches it, it's not a good movie. Just so we're upfront about it.
I thought it was up. Wasn't this
But
one the up for the Foreign Film Oscar? No?
yeah, it actually was up for a lot at TIFF,
No.
and it showed at Cannes, and Sitges. No, actually, it did show in Sitges, oddly, because the guy who directed it is like a Clive Barker protege guy. Anthony name forget right now that
Oh,
I'm
it was like
talking.
DiBiase or something like
Yeah,
that,
Anthony
right? Yeah.
DiBiase. Yeah, and then like a guy who did some ABCs of horror stuff, David Bond. But then Yoshihiro was super cool, and didn't speak any English, and they didn't have a translator really for him. So we like
Oh.
communicated by phones, and it was really fun.
Like Google Translate or something? Like what's
yeah,
the
like literally. But I had just like gone to a big con and seen Frankenstein Girl versus Vampire Girl, which he also did. So I like was like and had like Mutant Girl Squad on DVD and was like, oh my God, this is like Tokyo Gore Police guy. Like this is a celebrity. And like J. LaRose was in the movie, who I also love, who people know now from Righteous Gemstones. I don't know the original question was you asked me. I just started rambling about stuff.
It was about
But
how your look. What was the makeup
oh,
effect?
it was just like kind of a little bit like a character in fairy tale, actually, because it was just like teeth, like no lips, all teeth, super hollow eyes, no nose kind of situation. Very goopy, as we like a monster to be in general. Mm-hmm. A lot of lube. I was much less tattooed at the time, so they like airbrushed a bunch of stuff and like veins and stuff on me, and I was naked the whole time, mm-hmm. which I got picked partially because I was like, yeah, I'll get butt naked in Edmonton in February. Like, that's fine. It was really cold. Because we were filming where there was no heat in a lot of places, mm-hmm. and I was just like, but it was fun. It was cool.
Were you just completely committed, or do you have like a superpower where cold does not affect you as much?
Both. I have a circulatory disorder called Raynaud's.
I have and, a, me too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you go, it's numb, like the, and then yeah, the yes, fingertips. Yeah. So you go numb and you're just like, all right, whatever, kind of. But also because I have a big history of modeling, something happens when a camera goes up where you forget all your like physical ailments or anything, and you're like, I'm just doing a job. And then the camera stops and you're like, I'm dying.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I used to have like, growing up in Pittsburgh, like I felt like I had like ice in my blood. Like I could take any February windstorm. Like I was fine. And then like in recent years, I developed that same thing you mentioned, where like your finger, I could like, if I'm like taking ice cubes out of a ice cube tray, like my fingertips go numb. Like it's the worst. Yeah.
And I also grew up in Central PA, so I know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. From the same territory. The same territory. So one of the questions we, as you know, as a listener of the show, we always like to ask people is, what is your Stephen King origin story? So where did it all start for you, Cam?
I've thought about this so much, and I'm not going to say anything I've rehearsed in my head for the past however many weeks. So despite how obviously like into King and special interest-y I am about him, I didn't actually start like reading Stephen King until 2015 or 16. Mm-hmm. And that was like very like not committed to it even, but like started going hard around the pandemic. Like right when COVID started, the first like audiobook I did of Stephen King was The Stand, and it was, I didn't know what it was about actually. Then it was COVID. Like I started it in March and was in lockdown, and then the dates started to match up in the book with when I was listening, because I like took my time doing it on dog walks only and was like, that's a lot. But
it's a lot for King. I remember interviewing him around that time, and even he was like,
it's very eerie.
A little uncomfortable, like, especially when people started turning out with like machine guns to keep people indoors, and he was like, wait. Well, okay, it's not this ain't cool. This isn't cool anymore, guys. Like, all right.
It's too real now.
Joke's over.
I think I'm the weirdo there, because I kind of found it like therapeutic reading The Stand during lockdown.
Like comforting that other people were going through it, and you were going, quote-unquote.
I don't know. Like, I thought that, like, because I did that, I watched Contagion. Like, I guess I'm freaky that way, where I'm just like, here's all this trauma I'm going through. Let me address it through art. I don't know. But I got, like, a perverse amount of, like, I don't know, stillness inside reading that and watching that, going, like, oh, look at this. Like, especially Contagion, because Contagion is, like, you know, all these terms that are like you'd never heard before. It sounded like sci-fi when it came out, you know, all the social distancing and all this stuff was suddenly what everybody was always, you know, was talking about. And I mean, listen, that's not a happy movie. That's, you know, that's not a, especially, you know, people need to, you know, kind of remember, it's so funny how quickly we adapt and then move on from things like this. Cause I think that we're still dealing with a lot of lockdown era stuff, but you know, you kind of forget when you have that shared natural disaster kind of thing happen, where you know, you kind of forget, like, in that moment, just what was so scary was the uncertainty. It's like now when you look back on it, go, okay, well, you know, it wasn't that bad. We just had to lock ourselves up for a year, you know, until the vaccine came out. Then, you know, society could start. We didn't know that at the time. Like, we didn't know this could be the next 5 years. This could be you know, this could be normal for everything going forward, and we just have to, you know, risk getting the, you know, getting this horrible way to die disease, right? And Yeah, so I don't know. I think maybe just watching professionals working at stuff and watching, on in Contagion, and then reading all the good people trying to, gathering together and fighting against, the evil instincts or whatever. I don't know. It gave me some peace. So that's my
That makes
soapbox
sense.
on that during pandemic, and I'm gonna
So
quietly slip into the shadows
the
again.
Stand was your first, that was your intro to Stephen.
It wasn't the first Stephen King book I ever read was Pet Sematary.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm like, I know that because of listening to this, not to be weird and parasocial,
All right. Of course.
but yeah, I'm very familiar with both of you, and it feels awkward to be like, oh. anyway, but I also had the classic kid exposure, I feel, of seeing like a very small part of The Shining on TV or Pet Sematary, but it always seemed to be the most horrifying parts. And I was like a latchkey kid, so I was alone a lot and got like TV and movies raised me and whatever. But I was also very imaginative, so I would see those and be like, that's two. I can't be alone with this. so I like couldn't get watch Stephen King movies as a kid because it was too horrifying. It, for some reason, it wasn't like slasher movies where like you're not, I wasn't scared of Jason because I wasn't going to summer camp. Like, but like Stephen, like The Shining, like scary parent. I have one of those, like, or Pet Sematary, like animals dying, like crazy kids. I don't know. Those things are more like real around you, whatever. So I just didn't touch it for a very long time until I got older and then was like, okay.
I think that's why he resonates, because he creates these stories that are about things that a lot of people go through. They don't live in a haunted mansion or a haunted hotel for a winter season, but they have an out of control parent. We were just talking to Tom Hiddleston about book recommendations, and the Dead Zone is, to me, the Dead Zone is about like the powerlessness we feel when we see horrible things in the news, serial killer, war, disaster,
Politicians
corrupt politician. Yeah. That you feel like I should
that
do
wear
something.
slogans on a hat.
I know,
Michael
right?
Sheen in that, and then the parallels, it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot. So, but that's why he connects. So, I think that's why we have a show, because there's so many people who feel the same way. So you were had awareness of him, but you hadn't really read him when you were a kid. You just sort of like you had a kind of avoidant relationship with the Stephen
Well,
King.
yeah,
Sounds
because I
like.
think everyone grows up, or not everyone, I suppose if you're anyone who's it has a relationship with like movies or horror movies or certain kind of literature, you know who Stephen King is. Like he's a household name regardless of if like he's on The Simpsons. Like people know him if they don't know him, frankly. And it just was like, oh, I understand what he's about kind of forever. And also I feel like there's a period of my adolescence, because I'm 36, so there's some time where like it wasn't cool to be into Stephen King for some reason. Like it was like not the right age group that I was in. I was too young to have read him, been into him as a kid, but too like old to like I don't know. There was some weird thing because teenagers were only into like I Know What You Did Last Summer, and like I love Scream. That franchise is great, and like good for Wes Craven for like navigating all the age groups. But yeah, it just took me a minute to find the legs. And like you said, it was just like the scary things of Stephen King stuff wasn't the ghosts to me when I was a kid. And it was like addiction stuff, whatever, all that and stuff. And it was like, we have addiction at home. We don't need to like so, but that's also why it's nice, and like you said, why it resonates to come back to as an adult, because you're like older, ready to like address these things and delve into them and tackle the horrors of these very pretty adult subjects that I don't think I would have understood anyway as a kid very well, or I don't know, digested well as a kid. Like y'all talk about reading it, or best be you have, like as a kid. I cannot imagine reading it as a kid. Like I would have been like, what the, like these people are terrible. Like this is a lot.
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, when something sparks your imagination at that age, though, it's like, it's kind of like when you're like panning for gold, right? Like all the stuff that you don't understand just like sifts through, and then you catch the gold nuggets, right? And
Yeah.
so when the one that kind of shocks me when I look back on it was Cujo, because that was my first book, my first Stephen
Oh,
King
shit.
book, and my first adult book. And he, that book, when you reread it, you realize it's like 40% melodrama about, a family breaking up and adultery and a dude coming in, on top of bed sheets as revenge and stuff. And I'm like, did I cry, track that at
That's the
all
best
when I
revenge, by the
yeah
way.
yeah yes
Like,
Take note, everyone.
revenge
yeah
is a dish best served. Yeah, never mind.
Dried and
Salty.
sticky. It's
Welcome to the
odd. That's
KingCast. I hope you're not listening with your children.
Today we're talking about cum. Anyway,
Come and Stephen King. Cam, go.
okay, well, as we know, he's a very horny guy. I think that no one is going to question
We could legitimately do an episode just on that. What's the short story that he did where the maid like scoops up the cum of the
Oh.
dude and like uses witchcraft to make the perfect child or
Fuck, I
whatever?
forget what it's called.
But yeah. So it's like a maid like is cleaning a guy's room and it's like a rich, successful businessman and he jizzed on the bed sheets and she like saves
She's
it.
like
It's like, cool, check this out. And like in it's all told as she's telling the story of like why her kid doesn't have a dad, like telling her kid.
Yeah. And you're
So
like, no, as you're
and the
making
kid's
it.
like, maybe you shouldn't have told me.
You gotta call the men in the white coats and the butterfly nets.
I'm like, how do we come back? Where were we before we started talking about cum?
So, all right, we'll get
I
out
told you we
together
were gonna
and pull this
derail. I
back on
told you
the
before
rip.
we
So
started
anyway,
recording.
I was an adult performer, and that's. We often have people on who, they work as writers, directors, actors in all sorts of different fields. Do you think Stephen King has had a measurable impact on adult filmmaking?
I don't know, because there are a lot of parodies. There's a lot of parody in porn stuff. I know how graphically that y'all would want to talk about. Like, I'm like, can I say porn? It's like, yeah,
You
of course I
can,
can. You guys don't. We
yeah,
just said
come on.
come a million times.
One of our early advertisers was an ice cream cone shaped butt plug, and
Huh.
Wampler was so psyched that that's like you want to
Not
that
the
that was
optimal
one of the
shape for a
rare
butt
ad
plug.
reads that
Yeah.
Scott was like, sign me up, I want to do that one. So
There's
I'm
somebody
all
out there
over
who's like, you know what I'd like to try?
it.
This,
This conical plug.
what this Dairy Queen reminds me of?
So weird, you know? In terms of parody things in porn, though, I can't like think off the top of my head because everyone always wants to do superhero. Like, there's so many Marvel ones, and the
Well,
horror ones are always, oh, you know why you can't do them? Because payment processors won't allow, like, you can't have blood.
like it looks like violence or something.
Yeah, and you can't have or non-consent, and you can't have inhuman animals. Like vampires are dead, so they that's like necrophilia technically. So like payment processors won't allow that. There's all these like
Is that a
crazy
job?
rules.
Is that somebody like at these places that go, all right, I need to make sure that there's nobody pretending to be a vampire in this adult content that we're processing payment for?
I think it depends on the levels, but yes. And also, it's like each like sites or studios have compliance people that like figure out. This is so like silly, but
This is
like,
actually fascinating. I had no idea about any of this.
so there's incest is a very big subject that people like in porn, and they don't realize it because it's labeled with step. So like. But that's like a rule. You can't be like the girl fucks her dad. It's like she has to say stepdad in the video to establish that that's like a thing. And that all comes back to Stephen King because Brady Hartsfield in Mr. Mercedes and his mom. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the incestuous relationship that totally warped it, you know?
But also, I'm sorry, this is not about Stephen King at all, but one thing I really like to share with people that is a porn thing that no one thinks about. You know the video subjects that are like, I'm stuck in the dryer, or like the girl gets stuck in something and is like, help, I can't get out. And the guy comes and is like, and
Oh, take
helps her get
advantage.
out. And that's what it's actually just like a way for porn sites to circumvent bondage and consensual non-consent, basically, because the girl's stuck and has no other choice. And then this thing happens, and like guys who are watching
But
it,
she
it's
called
like,
for help, right?
So like, it's so funny to think about it that way and be
How
like,
is that?
oh.
How does that get around it though? Because if somebody's trapped and you take advantage of them, that's not
Because
cool,
she's
right?
like, they always say it being like, I guess. Like, it's like, well, what if? And the girl's like, I guess if it'll
Oh, it's
help, you
not.
know?
I thought you were gonna say it's like an
Well,
accident where it's like, whoops, I meant to help you out. And
that
then like
does happen too. Like, we were just
insert your
talking about Dave
Hanna-Barbera sound
Lebowski.
effect here, boing,
Yeah.
boing, you know?
Yeah.
He fixes her
Log jamming.
pipes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, but you know,
He fixes the cable. Yeah.
I wouldn't guess that thematically, you know, there are a lot of like Stephen King porn parodies and that sort of thing. But I guess more just, I think people who work, you correct me if I'm wrong, you know this world, like I think people who work in erotic films, adult films, they are storytellers. Like they're in it for
Yeah.
creative reasons. Like there's something about it that they enjoy that's separate from the sex. It's the storytelling aspect of it.
Yeah.
And then I wondered, like, just like if you go to any sci-fi convention or any horror convention or any basically like Comic-Con, the Venn diagram of people who are there who also love Stephen King is going to be huge. Like in the adult film world, are the stars, are the creators, is there a culture of like people love Stephen King there too? The same
I
way?
don't, I feel like there has to be, and the problem is that the industry is so varied in the types of people and types of content being created and things like that, where there are a million sites where no one cares about story. It's like this is the same thing happening over and over again and like whatever. But then there's like people like are the reason that I got introduced to you. I'm like, can I shout them out? I don't even know.
Sure.
Casey Calvert, cool. Anyway, who like wants to tell stories and do things like that with sex being kind of like it's just a part of the story. Like it's a thing that happens, the same as in Stephen King books, where like you're like, oh, that was kind of nice and horny, but that's just a part of the story because it's a human experience. But I assume there's like some crossover, but I've never gotten the opportunity to talk to people about that, about themselves enough, because it's such a quick moving like thing also. Like you're not getting to be around people for very long
Really,
on these sets.
there's not a lot of downtime where you're sitting around shooting the breeze and
Oh, there
like.
is, but a lot of people are so fucking over it that that you're not, it's like a hurry up and wait kind of situation, and everyone is we're old and we're not into it anymore, and we just want to get this day done and like so like get out of
So,
there, whatever.
pretty much every film set, the only people who are excited to be
Yes.
on any film set are the visitors who
Yeah.
are like,
Yeah.
ooh, I'm on a
Who
movie
get to
set.
leave
And
after like 2 hours.
everybody
Yeah.
else is like, ugh, let's get through the end of
Yeah.
this day. Yeah, I just wondered, like, is there like a, you know, a vein of people in that field who are like just
Vain, you
into.
had to choose that particular word to, well, talking about
And you
this.
know what? Any word you
Wink.
choose, there's going to be a double
Some
entendre
innuendo.
you can
Yeah.
choose. You can choose. But all right, there's a group of, you know, people
A
who are into him.
group?
I just
No, I'm
wonder.
just
Group
kidding.
activities.
How many to classify?
So there's no adult industry book club for Stephen King, really,
Unfortunately, no.
as far as well. Cam, you got a new assignment.
I know. I got a helmet.
Are there other people like you reached out to me and like I love Stephen King and we like bonded over that. Do you ever find people like that in your
Like
work or
in the industry? No, because also the thing is, I like have separated from mainstream. Actually, when I transitioned, because I started as a model and performer. And for people listening, when I say performer, I mean sex on camera. Okay. so I started like as that, and I was a girl. Weird. And then, and I like have known I was trans for a long time, but we didn't have the terminology. Also, big ups to COVID for helping a lot of people transition because it let us be in our house and present the way that we wanted to without having to mask how we felt like we had to present in society. So that was really cool. But I went through COVID and started to transition and was like, maybe I'm non-binary. And then I came out on the other end and was like, actually. And then I kept playing a girl on camera. And then I was like, I can't do this anymore. And then transitioned. So I left mainstream like 4 years ago, probably. So like, I don't even have like bearing on most people in it anymore. because they like I just don't hang around them. And now I, of course, am biased because like I surround myself with people who like the things that I like and not just because of my job. So like, yeah, like multiple of my partners are super into Stephen King. But like bunch of my friends, and I can like message people about new things coming out or like doing this. The few people that I told being like, holy shit, like so
I think King is a great way to make friends. Like I if I see somebody reading a Stephen King book, like I cannot help but go and talk to them. I'm sure it's annoying, but like, you know,
No,
if I
I feel
see
like,
somebody like I'm like, "Oh, I
yeah.
love that book," or "I haven't read that one," or whatever, like, "How are you liking it?"
Yeah, I feel like everyone or most people who are into Stephen King would be like stoked about that. I don't know. Just to like talk about whatever with someone to a certain point. Like, 'cause I don't, maybe not everyone's like the level of autism I am with it, but like, it's just fun. Especially if you're a big fan, it's fun to talk about or like have other people be excited about a thing that you're excited about. Engaging.
One of the things you sent me, you know, in our initial conversations was a video you and a friend made going to Maine. And I'm like, oh my God, you're in the blueberry field where they shot like the Mi'kmaq burial ground for Pet Sematary. And we went to all these King filming locations. And like, of course, everybody stops by his Victorian mansion to take a picture too. But tell me about that trip and how you documented it, because your VHS fascination, it's clearly like VHS video. It's not like a cell
Yeah, it's
phone
my
cam.
camcorder, like something.
No, that's what I wondered. Was it like, I thought, was it recorded on a, was it like recorded on an iPhone and you
Yeah,
know, an effect
it
put
was my
in?
legit like visual element for a podcast,
There you
but
go. The handy cam, yeah.
the old handy cam,
Cam
yeah.
is holding up a, what is that?
It's
What can you tell us
the
about it?
palm quarter, the Panasonic palm quarter.
Is that a retro relic or is that like
Yes,
somehow
I
like
don't
an
know when this is from. Like, I would assume the like late 90s, early 2000s. I don't know, but it still does VHS-C, like the little tiny VHS tapes. But then you have to either get a big VHS tape that the little VHS tape goes inside, or hook your camera up to a series of complicated wires to put it in stuff. Or if you have a CRT like these, then
You can just do
but
the
yeah, that.
red white connection.
Yes, yeah, red white yellow. So then you have to figure out who does what. That was actually one of my partners. Because I have multiple partners, people listening. Poly representation on the King cast. He's the one who like suggested I read Pet Sematary as my like, because he's super into Stephen King and he lives in Bangor, hilariously.
Oh, cool.
which is recent and a job thing, not just because he's that much of a Stephen King fan, but Pet Sematary was the book that he was like, this is my favorite Stephen King book. Like, I think you'll like it. And obviously I did, because we're here now. But it was an anniversary trip that him and I took that I like planned all these before he had moved to Bangor. Planned all the like we went to the Creed house. We had originally gone to like the Deadfall path, but it's just like in a parking lot behind an Elks Lodge. So it was like not I, we were like, ah, we'll skip that one.
I think the
Like when we
rocks
drove
are
up.
still there, right? Like the giant rocks that they moved, but everything else is gone.
Not at the Elks Lodge one because it was literally just a woods thing, but at the Mi'kmaq place, which is a separate place, is the rocks are like still there, like a bunch of the rock piles in the like blueberry barren things. So we like hiked out to that. We went to the Mount Hope Cemetery, I think it's called, where Stephen King is the preacher at the funeral, and where Pascal stands at the one grave, and where Louis, I always forget which it is, sits over
Lewis.
Gage's Louis, yeah, Gage's fake grave that's not actually there, like, and like, you know, we took all the pictures in the same poses as them, and like, and I
May
recorded
the
on my
Lord bless
camcorder.
you.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the preview, the trailer for that movie? Because it's like just the Stephen King part of him being like, made a lot, like, and it's like Pet Sematary, and you're like, this is not a way to sell this movie, really, but like,
I love it
whatever.
when King cameos, by the way, and I think that
He's very self-deprecating about it, and I think the story that I remember hearing, and maybe this is from one of your interviews, Anthony, for all I know, I may be regurgitating something he told you, but I think it was around the time that It Chapter 2 came out, because he was talking about Muschietti bringing him into the thing, and when what he said is that he told Andy's like, you know, me being in the movie tends to mean the movie turns out bad. Are you sure you want me in the
yeah
movie?
That was a piece I did.
I had a feeling it might have been you. But I love it in the good movies, the bad movies. Like, he plays what, Dr. Banger in Thinner, I think. He might as well just call him Dr. Stephen King.
I feel like he's great though, and all, like, every time he does an appearance, beyond being like, it's the guy, so fun.
He's also like clearly a smart individual, like he's sophisticated, he's a writer, and yet when he plays his cameos, he's always like the dumbest yokel on the planet. Like, there's Jordy Verrill who gets overtaken by the growth from the meteor. There's the guy from Creepshow.
Creepshow
2, the truck driver. Yeah.
Oh, God. That one's a little rough.
Yeah. He's a black guy. He's a black guy.
Yeah. You're like, I mean, not wrong.
But then the, what was the other one he did? The pizza
Maximum
delivery
Overdrive.
Guy. Maximum
also,
Overdrive.
This machine just called me an asshole.
He played kind of a yuppie in that one. That's a little, he's stretching his wings a little bit in that one.
Really? Because he's dressed like Tom Arnold from The Stupids. Like,
he does look like he's golfing or something.
Right. Yeah, he's wearing like his nicest tweed suit. So
Langoliers or something. Isn't he in that? Is like some weird smarmy guy.
He's like the chairman of the board of directors or something. Yeah. He like appears on the runway like as a hallucination. Yeah.
My favorite is the Sleepwalkers cameo where he's the caretaker for the cemetery that keeps trying to shift blame to all the other cameos. Like, hey, this wasn't my fault. They broke in, and like he says that to like Clive Barker and John Landis and Toby Hooper or whatever.
Frank Sinatra's played piano. He says it to him. Like, yeah, they just keep throwing random cameos in.
Yep.
yeah, that's funny. Well, but how was the trip, and what was like your what part of it was like the most emotional for you or most exciting?
I mean, that trip was awesome. I'd never been to Bangor before that, and I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong.
I
don't know if and it was surprising how it was both exactly what I expected and not what I expected at all. Because it is like people say where it's like, oh, I'm in Derry, because like, yeah, the standpipe is there and like all these like iconic spots, you're like, oh, that's literally the thing. But also just
the bridge that Adrian Mellon was thrown over, you know, like,
yeah, and my partner lives like really close to that, actually.
Up Mile Hill, and
but at the same time,
and that was based on a real case, the Adrian Mellon thing. That was a real, someone really was killed in a gay bashing incident, I believe.
And that bridge is like right, like, it, that's what my partner was like blocks away from that, and it's like, oh, what a fun sightseeing
the
thing.
Death bridge. I mean, it's I mean, they treat it really, it's so weird for being as rural as it is. It's also, it's country liberal, you know. I don't know if that's a thing, but it, where it's you know, they have that bridge as like, you know, they had like a monument and like
there's pride flags and stuff around it right now, a bunch like painted.
I don't know if it was temporary, but I know the city like painted like the rainbow, you know, across the sidewalk and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think it's still there.
For, you know, and listen, Maine's a blue state, but it's, again, it's like country blue. It feels like Texas was a blue
gave
state.
Us Susan Collins, so, you know.
Depending on where you go. God, that's so funny. Did I just learn that from you guys, that she lived like around, like a block away from Stephen King? Like, her house is like,
really? I don't know. That.
Maybe I was in an episode.
No,
yeah,
we learned that on the SK tours. Yeah. What, one of the houses directly across from the Victorian house on Broadway was Susan Collins's house. And, you know, and this is in the same era, they were both
residing there. I don't think King has made that Victorian house his house for a long time. I
No,
think
yeah,
I think it's more of like a decoy, essentially,
yeah,
isn't
it
it?
is
Like,
now. I mean, I think he still goes there, and you know, and
he's got an archive there, I believe, right? Isn't that where the archive is?
now it's more of a museum. But I think, you know, even as far back as like the late 2010 teens, he was like using that as an office. I know he has like kind of this like nondescript office that's, I think, by the airport, the Bangor Airport, where he did most of his writing back then. But you know, I don't know,
I
it
would do
would
that
still
too
be
if I
there.
was Stephen King. I would put up a big sign that's like Stephen King House over
Yeah,
here,
and then not be
and then like not
there.
be there.
The very first
It's
time I
like,
went, I didn't know what the address was, and I just typed into Google Maps. I'm like, I wonder if this will work. And this is like
yeah.
2017 ish. And I'm like, Stephen King House, and it popped up. So I'm like, all
You're like, oh
right.
shit. Well,
Yeah,
yep.
I'm
You
sure
did
he's like,
exactly that,
I'm gonna
Anthony.
buy the hauntedest looking motherfucking mansion in Bangor, and that's gonna
It's
be the
so cool,
Stephen King
though. And to
house.
keep people out, I'm gonna hire somebody to put a cast iron fence that has bats and
It's
spiders and shit on
spiders.
it.
It's the epitome of look at me, don't look at me,
I love it,
kind
man. I can't tell you, like, I remember when I was a kid and I was flipping through like the Stephen King Companion or whatever the fuck that book was that had like all this stuff in the like cover was him at the
Standing
gates,
there.
you know, with his big old like 1982 beard or whatever, and he's just opening the gates with that crazy house behind him. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the most emotional thing that like I saw going there that on that trip, because like just that, like being like, I mean, obviously he's been all over Bangor and like being a weird super fan, being like, I'm in the place, but like at that house, yeah. Wow, what
There
a
he is. We're holding up a copy of The
nerd.
Ultimate Guide to Stephen
Oh
King, and
man.
he's riding a motorcycle through the gates. Born to be bad.
God.
I love that
Yeah.
side of him though. I love that he's
I feel
enjoying
like
the
that's,
ride.
yeah, that's what
How?
makes him like a good writer also.
Yeah, Cam, how busy was it when you went? Because that I've been now to Bangor 3 times, and every single time you have to make the pilgrimage and stop by the
Yeah.
house, tip the hat or whatever, or dump some of your dead co-host in Stephen King's front yard, as one does.
Great. That's a good
We
move, actually.
maybe scattered some of Scott's ashes in the corner of Stephen
Sure, you
King's.
want to admit to that, because it's technically like
We smoked
allegedly.
very heavily in one corner of the yard and just
Yeah.
ashed our
There's like
cigarettes.
a very like awful sounding crime associated with like people who sprinkle ashes like at ballparks and things. It's like desecration of a corpse. Like,
Oh yeah, you're like,
whoa.
no, they would have been cool with this.
It's
It's
like,
like
no, we
totally
also threw
chill.
him in the sewer. I mean, come on, this is
Yeah.
the better
Yeah.
place. So
They're like, Matt, you can do.
But every time that I've been, it's like a fucking Disneyland attraction. Like it's
Oh,
every time
really?
I've been, there have been like, if I'm there for 10 minutes, I will have seen 4 or 5 cars pull up, stop, and somebody will come out and take a picture and then get back in the car.
Is it like the Leaning Tower of Pisa where like you could stand back and there are like 30 people all putting their hands up, like
The funny thing is that I've gone, I mean, I've been there like 4 or 5 times in the last year now because of visiting my partner, and 4 out of those times there's been no one there. Like because I always, before I leave town, I'm like, I'm gonna go by and be like, beep, there's a house and take a picture or whatever. And there's never anyone there. The one time the tours were going, so there was like the tour bus had pulled up like when we went. And then like maybe one other time 2 people walked up, but I noticed that like even with the tour bus, people were shy to take pictures right in front of it, which I thought was really funny. Like people would approach it from the side and take like some awful angle picture when you're like,
Oh,
come right here. Like just get
interesting.
like get on the gate and stuff.
He should have a little
So
stand set up where somebody
yeah.
charges a buck a photo.
I feel like people are timid about it or something, but I always think it's so weird driving around there and there's like no one at that house and I'm like, y'all know what? Where, like, get over here.
The location that would really get to me would be that blueberry field, the up on the mountaintop that they used for the Mi'kmaq burial
Yeah.
ground. Because when I watched the trailer as a kid, that was the moment that I was like, I need
The
to know
aerial
about this.
shot.
Like, yeah, I
Yeah.
love, I lo I thought that looked so beautiful, so haunting, and I love to explore the woods when I was a kid. Like, you grew up in Pennsylvania, right? You can
Yeah.
wander into the woods and find really weird and
Yeah.
scary and fun stuff. Even now, like, I'll scroll Facebook and there's this, I forget what it's called, but it's like satellite imagery, or somehow they'll be like, oh, there's like a Roman encampment here in this like field in England, and they can see like concentric rings or like they could tell from like the sky that there was once like architecture there.
Yeah.
And anything like that, the ruins of some, faith or some society, I find so intriguing. So like, I know it's like just a blueberry field where they shot the movie, but I'd feel the same way there that I do like in LA visiting a soundstage where the little plaque out front says, they shot Casablanca here and Ghostbusters and,
Yeah.
a bunch of other movies. But it's just like you're just in that space and it's like sort of a way of communing with something that you really love
Yeah.
that's really moving to you.
I also feel like that's a thing, and why, and again, why this like podcast exists, kind of why adaptations are so cool, because getting an added visual element to the book just makes it that much more like dense and authentic, and getting to be like, able to like visualize or go to the place and be like, I'm at the pet cemetery. Like that's that. I don't know. Fred Gwynne was here. Like,
Fred Gwynne.
yeah. just, I think that's like cool. And I know my partner felt the same way about the blueberry field place, because he was like, it's the most like real feeling location, and also the one that is isolated. Because when you go to the Creed house, you're like, this is someone's home. So you're like, eh, but yeah, that was a cool one.
So you wanted to talk about fairy tale. You had a whole list of potential subjects that you wanted to zero in on, but fairy tale's a good one. It's a recent one. What was your connection to fairy tale?
Not I'm we're gonna get mildly emotional, not really, but kind of maybe, because you already brought up Wampler and ashes and stuff. So I had a friend, Bex, who died in January of last year, so like a few months before Wampler did. And she was like one of my Stephen King friends, like who I moved away from where she lived and like lost touch and stuff over a long period of time, but she was like the one person that kept trying to like keep in contact with me, because I'm very like hermity and can be difficult that way. But she kept in contact with me by talking to me about Stephen King books, and gave me some that were her mom's from when her mom was in like a Stephen King book club and things like that. So we maintained like a long-term friendship link and stuff loosely, and we read like the Mr. Mercedes trilogy at the same time, and had just finished like End of Watch, like literally a day before she died, very unexpectedly, and that sucked. But I didn't know, like after that I was like, well, reading Stephen King was like, oh God, this is like very emotional. But then for some reason, Fairy Tale was the next one that I read and was suggested to me by a mutual friend of ours, who's really into Dark Tower. And it was like the perfect book to read for some reason right after she had died, because she was much more into like the fantasy of Stephen King versus the horror. And I was on the opposite end and was like, I'm not really so much for the fantasy stuff. So it felt like it was like a her book that she hadn't gotten to, and the messages in it, beyond like A Boy and His Dog, which is of course part of it that I love, but of like death and embracing death, or living life like to the fullest kind of things, or like what you do with your time, things like that, and just the fantastical nature of it. But regardless of the plot, I would have had an emotional tie to it anyway. But all those things are, and I like latched onto it hardcore, and it's one of like three Stephen King books that I just like bawled reading, probably. Cujo being another one. The dog stories, they get
The
you.
dog stories get you. Should we summarize it a little for the people who maybe haven't read it? Fairy Tale is the story of a young boy, well, it's a teenage boy. And his dog is pretty sick and frail and is, or no, does the dog belong to the
It's
old
the
man?
old man.
The old man, that's right. Sorry,
So it's like, it's I'm gonna let me take this over
You take it on. You.
and take the wheel. Yeah.
One, I feel like this is a really hard book to summarize, because there's like a million characters in it. But broad strokes, there's a 17-year-old kid named Charlie who's like an all-American boy, and through a series of unfortunate childhood events ends up wanting to do a bunch of good in life, do a lot of good deeds. And one of them leads him to saving an old man who's like the neighborhood jerk hermit guy who had fallen in his yard, and he like helps him when he broke his leg and stuff, and then starts taking care of his dog while he's in the hospital and becomes very attached to the old man and becomes his caretaker and the dog's caretaker as well. And then I don't,
there's like a shed spoiler. In the backyard.
Yeah,
right?
We're past spoiler level, right?
Oh, we're just gonna. The book's multiple years old.
If you don't
want to know about any part of the story, then what you doing listening to the show?
Yeah, but so the old man dies and leaves Charlie with this access to a hole in a shed that goes down to a tunnel to another world, basically. That's like a very fantasy land called Empus.
It's a very Alice in Wonderland kind of thing, right? Down the
and Wizard of Oz, like it's like a whole
Narnia,
like,
yeah.
But it's like two books. Like it's two different, like it's two books in one, because there's like Charlie's normal life, which has a whole arc of like his mom dying and his dad becomes an alcoholic, and then the dad gets sober. And then Mr. Bowditch, the old man, and Radar, the dog, which we didn't even say names yet. But then it turns into like a journey to save Radar, who's aging and dying rapidly, so that Charlie can like keep this dog. And then that turns into a journey of saving an entire kingdom from like an evil ruler and the like disease plague thing that's happening in gladiator games that are like it's a crazy, it really goes places.
It does, it keeps blooming, like it keeps going bigger and bigger.
And
it,
and you said it's two different stories. I'd argue there's at least three or four books in this book. You know, because there's a section, and this shakes a lot of people off, and a lot of you know, myself included, I have to admit, you know, there's a section where Charlie, the main character, gets imprisoned, and you're going, okay, well, he's got to figure out his way out of this. And then you get like 80 pages later and the motherfucker's still in jail, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? Like how, and you're counting the pages, and it's like, I don't have a lot left in this book. It's like, what's, is he just going to be in jail? This like, fantasy kind hurricane of. I don't know, it's like, you know, he's gonna be in jail this whole time doing these gladiatorial combat, you know, things. It's it switches up, and I think that can shake some folks off. But but I want to circle back to something that we were talking about earlier, and that's COVID books, because this is King's COVID outlet. This is what he wrote in lockdown. This is when he first described this book, he's like, this is what, you know, I needed to do to get out of my head and get out of like what was going on in lockdown. And when you look at it from that perspective, it's always going to be a fascinating book, whether you like it, love it, hate it, whatever. It's really interesting that when King was like felt trapped, this is what his imagination gave him, right? This is the story. And it plays with some tropes. It's usually the dad who's gone, not the mom, but it plays with some tropes. The single parent, the good, like you said, all American kid. You got the heartwarming boy and his dog, you know, adventure story. You got a talisman / Dark Tower esque, you know, escape into a separate like world that's similar to ours but isn't, and it's got its own, it's got some Eyes of the Dragon in there. You know, it's feels like he's doing a lot of comfort things.
Yeah,
you know, in this book,
that's what I and isn't, I forget because I didn't reread the end of it, like the epilogue. I feel like he literally does a thing where he's like, yeah, there's a happy ending, like I did a happy story, so I hope that's okay, like basically, because I feel like everyone has come to expect some like deep trauma, like finishing a book and being like, holy shit, like I don't know what to do with this. But this I genuinely is just like kind of a feel-good book at the end of it. Overall bittersweet, like whatever, but still for Stephen King it's like it's a fairy tale, like
it's a fairy tale.
things wrap up in a nice pretty bow, like
in
ways that, you know, I don't find super satisfying, to be perfectly honest. It's this isn't a huge book for me, but you know, but there's all these things that are set up, like at the longer that Charlie's over there, the more he's starting to take the physical attributes of like the chosen one king, you know, blue eyes and blonde hair
Rough,
and
by
all.
the
Yeah. Very Aryan, I gotta point
Yeah.
out.
I know he wasn't going for that, but in
Yeah.
reading it, you're like,
He's getting better. He doesn't have those shitty brown eyes anymore.
Yeah.
No.
I thought he was turning into a golden retriever, but
Yeah, that
that's a
now
better
that
take.
I'm
Yeah.
on board. Him and his Radar go and
Yeah.
frolic and play for the end of their days. And then like, but once he like helps overthrow the evil, then it's like, okay, now that all that shit just goes away and he's gonna
Yeah.
go back up and reunite with his dad, and he's got a dog that'll live for much longer now, and you know. It felt
All
like a
happy and
little
good.
bit of a pretty bow on it,
I
but
always think of that. It reminds me of that. You remember that song Lazy Sunday from SNL? It's like 20 years old now, but it's
yeah.
like they're going to see Chronicles of Narnia and they're like, be quiet in the theater or it's going to get tragic. We're about to go to a dream world of magic. Like, and it's that
It is
same thing. Like, dream
that.
world of magic is going to dispel the tragic. So
That's
that's what he's
I
going
feel
on for.
like it's not like this isn't my favorite Stephen King book, obviously, or like probably even top, I don't know, like five or ten, I don't know, maybe. But I feel like it is more of like a lesson in people not being assholes, because people like shredded this book on like Reddit and shit like that about being like, what the hell is he doing? This is like a young adult novel and stuff. And it's like, he doesn't just write super awful horror books, you know, right? Like he's a writer. Like he can do other things. And can we not like appreciate something that's a little off the beaten path? It's like, and it's not even off the beaten path, by the way. It's very like whatever.
Yeah, it's very
But
Talisman, right? It's
and
sort
that
of
yeah.
along those lines.
And
Well,
I
he
totally
got
agree with you on things being bad at the end, for the
yeah.
record. But
Right.
like where you're
Well,
like
and he goes through this every you know, listen, if Stephen King would like put out books the way Kubrick put out movies, then I would get up being upset when he puts out
Yeah.
one you don't like, but that motherfucker puts out one or two books a year. You know,
Yeah.
it's like you don't like this one,
Statistically.
it's like the weather in Hawaii, you know, just wait a minute and you'll get a second chance at, you know, doing
Yeah.
something, you
It's
know.
fine to not have something resonate for you, but you gotta let people try, let authors try
Yeah.
things. And you know, I enjoyed this book. I actually thought it was
Yeah.
a lot of fun, and I loved the notion that, you know, this world unfolds very gradually to Charlie, and he's meeting
Yeah.
these people who have sort of like deformities and mutations, and it turns out it's this magic that's af afflicting them. And
Yeah, there's
I
like
you
a
know.
plague going across the fantasy world, and it all stems from the shitty brother that usurped power, and he's drawing upon this dark magic from a well
Yeah.
that is very clearly like
Cthulhu.
Lovecraftian by the end, and shit gets fucking creepy for that final confrontation, like,
Yeah.
and he shows up,
Also
you
just
know,
gross.
yeah, it's super gross. But I'll have to say, I think the reason why, you know, this one, you know, was a tough one for me is because I was super into the boy and his dog story, right? I'm like, ah, great, I'm hooked and I'm in for the ride. And then that's resolved like halfway through. Like he gets to the sundial, the dog
Yeah.
gets, you know, saved, and then you're like, well, shit, what now? We have like 300 pages left, and then
Yeah.
he's in jail for 250 of those pages. You have that, but to me, like the things that were really capturing my imagination felt like something that King thought of in the moment, then like eschewed for something I didn't like as much, which was that captivity story. And that's like the fact that this world was accessible by storytellers going back for centuries, right? And that all the Brothers Grimm stories came from
Yeah.
here, all the fairy tales that we know,
Bradbury.
the whole con yeah, Bradbury, yeah, the whole concept of what we think of as a fairy tale all originated here. So you're seeing the dark real world version. Like this is what if these fairy tales really existed, you know, the finding the skeleton of the Little Mermaid, or you know,
Yeah.
like seeing what, you know, Rumpelstiltskin really is, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, you know, that to me like really sparked my imagination going, man, this is dark, you know, Stephen King playing in that dark fairy tale realm literally, and how rich is that for him to explore, as this is what influenced all the stories that we all know and that have influenced all of our storytelling, like going back to the days of Grendel, right? You know, and Beowulf, you know, so it's like, how great is that as a concept? And it's more of a dressing than something that he actually focuses
on.
And so I think that, you know, and that's a dangerous thing. You know, I hate when people go see movies and they get pissed off because the movie isn't what they wanted it to be. It's like, well, that's not the movie's job. The movie's job is to be what it is, and then you react to that.
Yeah. This is his version of A Princess Bride. He's the grandfather telling us this story. That's right. What he's doing. I mean, like, he's making up his own fairy tale. And like,
we just spent a lot of time in the pit of despair without nipple suction. Yeah.
I appreciate him for taking a chance on it. I had a good time with this book, you know. I don't know. I'm sorry to hear the people on Reddit like tore it apart, but do people on Reddit do anything except tear things apart? Like, I just
that's
sort of
like it's like... the negative confirmation bias. No one's going to like gut, like, it's like an ER having a 1-star review because, right. Yeah, no shit, you're at the ER. Like, yeah, you
had
have
a terrible
time
there.
Yeah. Like, of course, you're coming here to complain, not to like sing all these praises and whatever, but it's also like. A lot of people compare being like, it's not like his early work. It's like, yeah, dude, he's not like on coke or addicted to oxy or like whatever is happening in his life. Like, he's like this guy now and there's other things going on. So I don't know. Yeah, I didn't think about the rereading it because I did this like past week, the prison thing taking so long. I like didn't look at it that way, but now that you're saying that, I'm like, yeah, there was a lot of that, I suppose. But I liked the characters. Yeah.
That's how I felt about Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, they spent too much time in the prison.
Classic. Green Mile too.
What are we gonna get
out
of
doing
here?
In there? Get out of there!
Come on, give me more Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah. So that character deeply upsetting.
The real killer. Of...
I love. It's like they're all like they're not really. He didn't do like the totally recognizable. It's like the twisted, slightly familiar version of all those fairy tales. It's like going back to an author's hometown and meeting his or her, like. Friends and realizing, oh, this is who populates your books. Like,
yeah, that's one
exactly
thing,
the same.
Like, rereading it, I wish that there were more, like, kind of obvious parallels between his real life and Empus with how, like, Christopher Pauly is Rumpelstiltskin or, like, whatever. Like, it'd be. Because I totally did a thing where I wrote down a fan cast adaptation thing that's heavily Mike Flanagan based.
I want to hear this list, so don't crumple it up yet.
I'm like, it's in my notes app. Don't worry. But I was like, in doing that, was like, what if like the same character, like actress who plays the PT woman who helps Mr. Bowditch is also like Dora or something, like the like caregivers of both worlds.
It's like dual casting where you have the same actor play the same part.
Yeah. And I feel like that could work in not a ton of roles, but like some, like, like it's like Hook or no, Jumanji rather, where his dad is the hunter guy as well.
Yeah. Like, that goes back to J.M. Barrie and Peter Pan. Whenever they would do the play, the guy who played the father would always play Captain Hook as well. Partly because they're not on stage at the same time, but there's also something symbolic.
And it saves a little money, right?
Yeah. But there's something symbolic happening there. That's who you're manifesting in a way.
I feel like that'd be a fun thing. If there is supposed to be an adaptation of it, but like the last thing they said about was a year ago or something. So I don't really know.
It was crazy because when the book came out, like right away, it was like, and Paul Greengrass is going to make this into a movie. And you read the book, you're like, hey, Paul Greengrass? It's like the guy that did United 93 and the Bourne movies. Like
Guillermo del Toro is the one quoted on the cover. So kind of that would be more in his wheelhouse.
That'd be sick.
For sure. For sure. Oh, man, he would totally lean in all the fairy tale shit that I think King just kind of brought up and then dropped in the book.
I forget who I just read that they said someone else was not Paul Greengrass, someone else that I was like, who the hell? Like, why would that guy be doing
it? Yeah, I think it was the show run, the guy that like created or show ran Fringe.
Oh yes, yeah.
Yeah. So which, I mean, and they instead of it being a movie, it's probably going to be a limited series or something. If it happens, we'll see.
Which works. Good God, I hope so. Because could you imagine putting all this shit in a movie? Anyway,
Cam, what's your fan casting? Like, you're the casting director for Fairy Tale the movie. Who do you got?
Okay, I only like kind of sat down to do this today, so it's like all over the place. And I was trying to shoehorn too many Mike Flanagan people into it, and realized that was a mistake. You can't get them all.
It should just be Mike Flanagan in every role.
Yes, that is actually what I wrote down here.
So,
So, yeah, it's
Mike
I
Flanagan,
did,
the guy at the funeral?
as radar. It's
Yeah. Yeah.
weird.
He's gonna do all the motion capture for the dog. Yep.
Yeah, Andy Serkis, whomst? Mike Flanagan is here. I did actually put him down for Lindy because I was like, that's a side character that's pretty important and has like, but a few lines only or whatever. So, all right. Charlie, I put Jacob Tremblay, even though he's not at all the right height, but that's okay. He's the right age, and I feel like that's important. Matthew Lillard for his dad.
Oh,
Katie
nice.
Parker, who people listening, Katie Parker is like the very nice wife in House of Usher who gets treated like shit
Oh, yeah.
by Riley from Midnight Mass. I forget his actual name. Which also is kind of a shitty role to take because you die immediately. But you know, Mark Hamill for Mr. Bowditch, I feel like would be fun. I put Anna Beth Gish for Melissa Wilcox, the PT woman, because I just liked her in Midnight Mass as the doctor. And she's always very caretakery and stuff. And then I had also put her to be Dora because she did like some prosthetic effects stuff in House of Usher, so she's not scared to get dirty. So I was like, yeah, maybe that. But she doesn't have huge tits, so sorry. I'm so sorry. I just talked about her boobs on here. I feel all the respect. I
Was that
forget
a big part? I
the.
don't remember that. Was that a big part of the
Oh
character?
yeah, when he introduces Dora, he's like,
This
Charlie
is the
knew
old
that
woman
she
who lives in the
was.
shoe, right? Like
Yes,
the,
exactly. Yeah. And Charlie like knows she's a woman because she's wearing a dress and she has a huge rack. And it's
Well,
like,
it wouldn't be
okay.
Stephen King introducing a character if he didn't talk either about the main character's penile reaction to that character or the boobs on that character. So.
Or the nipples stiffening. That
Oh,
also.
yep.
Yep.
Yep. Got.
And that's not also that's not the only woman in the book where he introduces by talking about boobs, so it's pretty funny. For the, I forget the nosy neighbor lady's name, but Samantha Sloyan, I can't
Floyd,
pronounce her last
yeah.
name. Yeah, which I wish there was a different role in this that I would like put her in because I love her so fucking much.
She's
And her
wonderful.
as Bev and like, yeah. Because I originally was like she could be Petra, the like evil lady, but that's Carla Gugino.
Oh,
That's got to
yeah.
be Carla Gugino. Like,
Carla Gugino's really sewn up the supernatural evil lady
yeah,
genre, right?
like I feel like that's perfect for that. For Rumpelstiltskin, I put Henry Thomas because he was such a good asshole in House of Usher. Like,
Oh, he was.
yeah, I was
Yeah.
terrified of him actually. So,
Well, yeah.
so passive aggressive too,
He's
like
gonna
just
say
the
like he's
worst.
gonna get a reputation because every time he pops up in a Stephen King thing, then he's either gonna be showing up as Jack Torrance or he's gonna be showing up as the pervert
Molesting
dad.
dad,
Yeah.
yeah, from
Oh
Gerald's
yeah, I
Game.
forgot
Molester.
Gerald's Game. He's that. Yeah. Oh no.
The
Well,
let's
sorry,
sit and
buddy.
watch the eclipse,
You
honey.
gotta figure,
Yeah.
like, oh, it's fun to be part of the, what's it called, the Flanafam,
Flavengers, they all
Flavengers.
said. Yeah.
But when you're the guy that he keeps casting as perverts and weirdos, like,
Damn it.
how do you see me?
At least he has the Hill House one where he's just a nice good dad.
Yeah. Like Samantha
Like
Sloyan, I was like, oh, she's gonna be Carrie's mom, but she just played the nice gym teacher. She could be somebody
Yeah.
else. She could have been,
Yeah. Oh no.
in
Is she being Carrie's
Life of
mom?
Chuck.
Because
She's Carrie's mom.
that's sick. I
It's great
forgot about that
casting, but it's
casting.
like
Yeah.
I mean it's
I
on the
ran into her
nose,
at the
but
Life of Chuck, and I was like, yeah, she was like excited to play that. I'm like, yeah, but you just played the cool gym teacher in Life of Chuck, so like you could have done either part.
It's a little on the nose, but it's the kind of on the nose where you can't ignore it. Like casting
Yes.
Patrick Stewart as Professor X, it's just like, of
Yeah.
course, of
She
course,
has such
God has
intensity.
deemed this to be
It's
true.
in her eyes, she has just such intensity that like it's like it pushes you back from the screen. Like she conjures this sort of ferocity with her expressions.
I have no knowledge of Mike's approach to Carrie, but I'm curious if he's going to take this runway of being able to tell the story in a series format, you know, in a long form format, if we're going to see a side of Margaret White that's not as one dimensional
Deranged.
as the
Yeah.
version that we get both in the book and the movie adaptations. I wonder.
In
And
both
I think
movie
Samantha
adaptations.
Sloyan can really pull it off either way. So,
and I feel like we'll be. I mean, no hate to. What's the actress's name that played the original Carrie's mom?
Piper Laurie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, she was great. Obviously, yeah. I'm sorry to Julianne Moore. Did not love that one, but
yeah,
that whole thing was a mess. Anyway. Yeah. I feel like this is going to be sick, whatever happens with the Flanagan Carrie overall.
All right, keep going. Who else we got?
I also put Kathy Bates for Dora in case we wanted to like do someone else. That is... Just to like slip her in there because I love her. And her Dolores Claiborne whole thing is great to me.
Another great fake Maine accent, by the way,
that goes
underappreciated.
You know,
Fred Gwynn takes up all the oxygen when you're having that conversation. But
I like Fred Gwynn. If you ever talk to these Maine people, they do sound like that. Like that's the thing. Is it we make fun of it because it sounds so alien to us, but it's like, well, that's how they talk. Like if you ever meet anybody from Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh accent is absurd. It's so twangy, but like you never see it depicted on screen. So when you do see it, you're like, what's going on with that person?
Yeah. Accurate or not, it's very cartoony and I love it. But yeah.
And but she's great at it.
Yeah. She's very pointed in Dolores Claiborne. When you watch that, it's like she's kind of has a subtle accent through most of it. And then every once in a while, you see it like somebody told her to hammer. Like one of us is going to the bone. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and she really,
he was
really
drinking. Like you're like, all right.
Yep. Yep.
Feeling that, I guess.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Well, Kate Siegel obviously has to be in it. So I put her for Claudia and also because of how she acted in House of Usher, which is really different than how she usually acts in Mike Flanagan stuff. She was like very like flamboyant and stuff. And I think a character where she's just screaming the whole time would be very fun. I also feel like I should like say on for people who haven't read this, there's like several characters like Claudia's deaf. So she is just screaming because she can't hear how loud she's talking.
Yeah, she's not naturally born deaf. You know, so she's working through some shit. There's, you know, there's one character that's blind that becomes blinded and throughout all this stuff. So it's part of the affliction that's going through the land.
The royal family specifically, when there's like a big casting out of evil people over the good people or whatever, and the royal family flees and they all lose a sense. So like Leah, who's like the princess girl who I put McKenna Grace, her mouth gets sealed shut, which also is like one of the most upsetting mental images to me in reading this book is her like slitting her little mouth open to like suck like the lemonade stuff through and stuff. And it constantly having to be a thing. But then we also get a ventriloquist horse. So that's cool. Which is awesome.
How could you hate the? How could people hate this book? It is so.
I know, it's so
off
fun.
The wall.
I get it when you get to the prison thing and being like, "All right, dude, how much am I going to have to like read about this dude shitting his ass out?" But like, it's all just part of it. For the blind one, Woody, I put Matt Frewer. Because
original trash
like,
can man.
Yeah, and just like. He's described as very gaunt and tall and bald, and that's like the first Stephen King person I think of in those ways.
Yeah.
But for the guy that's shitting his ass out constantly in the prison, Hammy, I put Dave Desmalchian.
Desmalchian.
Because I feel like he is good at being really sad and pathetic, which sounds bad. But Prisoners is one of my like favorite movies, and he's so like
he's got a niche.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Prisoners is great. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he's so like meek and weird, but also scary in that. for Iota, I put Raoul Coley.
Okay.
Because I don't know why, but when I listen to the audiobook, which also the audiobook for this is really good, and Stephen King reads a part of it. When there's like recordings that Mr. Bowditch does for Charlie after he dies. Well, he recorded them before he died. Anyway, but Stephen King is the one who reads the recordings.
Oh, that's cool. And
yeah. That's like a fun little like he doesn't do Mr. Bowditch's voice like through the book, but for the recordings. Cool. Hmm. Anyway. There's like a million people in
Who's
this
the narrator overall?
I forget. I don't know who this guy is. Mm-hmm. That, but he was great and was like really good at voices and making distinctions between different characters and stuff. Although there was, oh no, don't play Salad. Early on in it, when he does Bowditch's voice, he kind of sounds like he's doing a Nixon impression, which is funny. Like, his name's Seth Newmrich. Oh, okay. I'm not sure who it is, though. But he's very good at it, which is a thing that Stephen King audiobooks generally have really good narrators, I feel. They like can. Will Patton and Stephen Weber. Mm-hmm. It's like one of my favorites. Although hearing an adult man do a little girl's voice, never going to be something you get used to.
I had William Sadler on around the time Nosferatu came out, and he did the Langoliers audiobook. And that was one of the big King connections. And I talked to him about that, and he's like, how was it? And I'm like, well, he's like, I haven't listened to it in a while. And I'm like, and he's like, it's like, I don't think I did a very good job on that. Like, I wasn't really super into all that stuff. He's like, how was it? And I was like, essentially trying to say, like, listen, man, you had a hard job because it's a novella that has like fucking 90 characters in it.
Yeah.
And they all have, one's a fucking British spy, another one's like a little blind girl, and, you know, Southern with a Southern accent. And you have like all this stuff. I'm like, he didn't give you an easy job, but like that pause, he just started laughing. He's like, that good, huh?
Hey, at least he can be like real about it.
But yeah, when you mentioned a grown man doing the voice of a little girl, I just flashed on Willem Dafoe trying to pull off what's her name, Delilah, I think. In the
related to that, this isn't Stephen King, but there's a Josh Malerman book called Incidents Around the House. Have either of you read that?
Mm-mm.
I think it came out like last year or maybe the year before. I listened to the audiobook, and it's told from the perspective of a little girl, and it's in this little girl like a little tiny, like cutesy voice. It's narrated by an actress named Delaney Nicole Gill. And I couldn't tell, is this an actual child? Because then occasionally she would shift to like narrate the mother or father and like of this story. And like, she would sound like a grown woman. I'm like, is this a little girl doing a grown-up voice, or is this a grown-up doing a little girl voice? It was
what
a great
skilled child.
It was a great performance. I think it's like somebody who's like 18 or 19, and so she kind of like conjured both. But if you like scary stuff, like this is one of the scariest books I've ever read. So Incidents Around the House, and get the audiobook for that performance.
Okay,
just a little free recommendation.
I love it.
Do we have more on the casting?
Oh God, there's so many more, but I feel like we're just talking about this for like an hour.
We're in prison.
The most important one, the last one I'll say, because two is Eldon, Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Okay. I just feel like that's good. And then for Fremy and Stooks, which are like the comedian dudes in the jail together, I did Patty Considine and Rafe Spall. Because of Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz.
They could be playing those characters.
Yeah, well, just like literally that.
Isn't Eldon like, am I remembering this right? Like the king is like this sort of squat little, like basically just like a little head.
No, I kept picturing Jesse Plemons.
Yeah, I kept picturing that. Who's the character from Ant-Man Quantumania who gets
MODOK?
Turned into MODOK? Like, I just picture MODOK.
I was thinking of Pearl from Blade. Is it Blade 1 or 2?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
Is that blob? Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of situation that has like a mouth and a face, and you're like,
the girl from the end of Slither. All right, we're in.
Yeah,
I get you.
There's so he gets worse at the end.
But. Yeah, this evil king like is, it's like the Joffrey of this story, and this is the one that like betrayed his family, usurped power, and he's like pulling on this dark cosmic. Mm-hmm. power to do it, and it like is deforming him in the way that everybody else is getting deformed, but he keeps going back to that well, and yeah,
literally
it becomes a body horror thing by the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I feel like is important in that at that point in the story, because you are kind of like, what are we, because it goes through the whole tournament of the fair one. Of them all like fighting and Charlie having to make it through, and
which is like the Spartacus sub book in the book. Yeah.
Yeah, and coming up with an escape plan and all this stuff, while there's also the people beating them with sticks, the skeleton knight guys and stuff, and you're like, holy shit, there's so much going on. But then it comes back around to that. Will they escape and then come back? And then
Yeah, that's another issue I have. The back half of the book is all about getting into the same place and getting out of the same place and getting back into the same place, then getting back out of the same
yeah,
place.
it could have been condensed, maybe.
It does feel a little bit like every once in a while, sometimes King's plotting because he doesn't plan in advance, and he doesn't storyboard, or not storyboard, what's it, outline the novelist version of storyboarding. He doesn't outline, sometimes he can run in circles a little bit, and you get that feeling quite a bit in this one.
But also, I don't know. It's like a good and bad, because it's fun to like stay in the world more, kind of, and explore it in different ways, like them getting in and out repeatedly from it's Moline, I think it's called, from like Deep Moline and whatever. It explores different areas of the castle, and then you get backstories of like people's, like Hannah's like relationship with Eldin, the princess's relationship with the bad guy, and shit like that from them exploring. And I would like to have had that more, like the description of the what's the actual city called? I can't remember right now. A whole other name, but the description of it's really cool, and it's like stained glass towers, and the city shifts as you move through it, so you get lost really easy, and things like that that make it even scarier and tenser as he's like trying to navigate through and escape. And also, there's a chapter that starts out of Radar's perspective, and I wish that happened more, but.
Yeah, the only name that I really remember from this book is, because he repeats it so goddamn much, is Gog Magog,
And
which is
that's a whole Stephen King thing also.
the evil entity at the that's in the well, and that's, from Charlie remembering his fairy tale lore that you have power over something when you know its name. That's the Rumpelstiltskin thing, and
Which
so
feels
he.
very also Pennywise-y, kind of, in a way.
It's definitely venturing into that Ritual of Chud territory, when they're fighting the cosmic horror that's behind everything. But yeah, he just keeps calling out Gog Magog, Gog Magog.
Which is very
That's a
funny in the
biblical
audiobook.
reference. That's
Oh,
from
is
Book
it?
of Revelation. Yeah, Gog and
Okay.
Magog are like these sort of dual entities that I think they're like harbingers of the apocalypse or something.
Oh,
But
yeah. That makes sense then.
I'm not a biblical scholar, but that kind of but the Book of Revelation kind of rules. So this
If you're gonna read one,
is the most metal of the parts of the
is
Bible,
that where all
of
the angels are
course.
fighting and all that stuff? Yeah.
Biblically accurate angels.
Yes, exactly.
That is I guess I like do wish that radar was more a thing, because I feel like that is, you said before, Eric, that's like what sells you, getting you there, and then radar leaves, and then you're like, well.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole hook of this story is this boy, this teenager falling in love with this dog, and it's a quest to save the dog. And the quest, it's not only the quest is over, then you separate this pair that you love, and you separate them for almost the entire rest of the book. I was just like, listen, Steve, you're a much smarter writer than I am, than I'll ever be and could ever wish to be, but still curious decision on that one. I mean, I get it. You couldn't. I feel like if the dog had stayed, the dog is dead. So I'd much rather them separate and then come back, and you get the reunion. But yeah, something is gone at that point. So.
Also, I think it's like curious. I just want like other people's takes on the ending, I guess, of the fact that he leaves Empus and takes his dad back just to be like, this is where I was. I'm not crazy. Look how cool and stuff. But then after that is like, that's it, and closes it. And it's not like a I'm trying to think of a story that it like compares to, of like going back and being able to visit again, or like knowing it exists and you can go just see Dora like once in a while, who like I got very emotionally attached to, like Dora and Iota, who's one of the guys in the prison, which is I think why I like was really into that part also. But like it's just like, nope, we're done with that, which I guess is a lesson in its own of being like, yeah, sometimes you have a little adventure and then it's over and you move on with your life, and that's very adult to look at it that way. But I'm
Yeah.
also like, oh,
Yeah. Yeah. I
So.
mean, I he t doesn't he he takes his dad back once just
Yeah.
to kind of show him, like, listen, I'm not crazy when
Yeah.
I'm telling you these stories, because he disappears in the real world for like 4 months
Yeah.
during all this, and then he just pops up again and has to tell everybody else a bullshit story, but he wants his dad to know that he's not hiding some illicit thing or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Not that he would have, because he's like the literal best kid ever in the
Yeah.
world. He's never done anything wrong in his life. Well, actually, that's not true. Apparently, they like put shit on someone's car or
Yeah,
something
that's why,
when
isn't
there
that
was
why
one friend.
he had to like, that's where his rock bottom was, is that he had to like kind of
Yeah.
change after that. Yeah.
No, well, the whole, I mean, yeah, he doesn't like think about that because he's like, that's the worst thing I've done. But the whole story happens basically because of his dad being an alcoholic, and he is taking care of his dad and himself, and life is going like so down in the shitter that he prays one night, and he's not religious at all, but he like prays to be like, just like, God help me. Like, I'll do anything. I'll like pay you back, however. I'll like work my entire life to make this like right if you just help me and get my dad like sober, basically. And then it happens. So then he's like, I have to do this or whatever
And
to like do my end.
in a very Stephen King way, he's like, I don't know if it's just coincidence, but I'm gonna, just in case it isn't, I'm gonna be good for the year on
Yeah.
out as my penance. I'm gonna keep my side of the bargain.
Yeah, for like ever. And also to the point of where he starts doing stuff for Mr. Bowditch, but he doesn't consider that as part of it. Like, he's like, this is just like a side adventure, but I still need to go do all my like extracurriculars at school and be on the baseball team and like the. But then at some point is like, actually, fuck this. I'm gonna go hang out with this old dude,
Yeah.
like, who
This
has a
old
rabbit
cranky
ears
son bitch.
TV. Yeah. Who has a gold bucket.
Yeah, who has a bucket with gold pebbles that apparently local fucking hoodlums find out about, and yeah.
Yeah.
He's always gotta have that threat.
Rumpelstiltskin's always waiting for you.
If we learn nothing else from our
It's
patron, there's
that.
always a Rumpelstiltskin around the corner, so.
That's what the takeaway, actually. That's what Steven wanted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your personal attack your own Rumpelstiltskin,
Yeah.
who's killing a cricket that's of unusual size or
Yes.
something.
Love
Yeah. Something there.
it. Well, is there anything else we want to talk about before we bring this one in for a landing? I think we covered
We
a whole
covered
lot of
quite a
bases.
bit. Yeah. Cam, is there anything else you want to add? I think the only other thing I would love to close with is we talked about your VHS interests and your
Yeah.
collection and your archive of them and your YouTube series. But what is it about VHS that you love? Because it's definitely a textured format, right? Like, it's not
Yeah.
like it's like, oh, I love 4K because it's so clear. Like, you feel like you're right there. Like, there's something about the space it puts between you and the story, right? That must appeal
Yeah.
to you.
Well, for one, I think everyone should get into physical media more than most people are right now, because streaming services are unreliable and also ridiculous in general. Which I say that, and I'm subscribed to like, five different things, but that's, I must be
Same.
consuming media at all times. But the physical media of VHS tape specifically, I really like in one, a time capsule way, because on most tapes, there'll also be like previews for other movies that I've often never heard of, or just the way that they tried to sell movies that you're like, what? That's the trailer that we made for this, is so fun to see because it's like based on the time period and what people were consuming and how. And then like discovering different things from different time periods, like the early 2000s teen horror movies or whatever, there was always a music video at the end. Like, what's the super group for the Faculty did another Brick in the Wall? That's like Layne Staley and Tom Morello, and I forget what their Class of 99, I think is, yeah. There's a music video for that at the end with all the actors in the music video, and you're like, where the fuck else am I? I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere, but it's so much more fun to be like, whoa. And some things don't exist outside of VHS tapes or DVD, maybe. So being able to like collect those things and archive them, which I, so I digitize my tapes and then put them all in like a Dropbox folder. So I have like a digital archive, I think is just important in like a archive.org kind of way of like maintaining copies of things just for, I don't know, whenever.
This reminds me of like, cause you know, I grew up in the VHS era and I don't have a lot of nostalgia for it. Cause even as you know, me in the era, I was always frustrated at the pan and scanning. I was frustrated at the quality. So I was like, when DVD came around, I'm like, you know, fuck VHS.
Hell yeah.
I was ready to jump on. And you know, when Blu-ray came around, I was ready to jump on. And 4K came around, I'm like, yes, this is like getting your own 35 millimeter print of a movie now. Like this is the quality I want. But as a, I was a film collector as well. I collected a lot of 35 and a lot of 16, and 16 is feels like it's the same collecting mindset of VHS now, because it is there are cuts. Like I have two interesting 16 millimeter prints. One of them is Jaws and the other one's The Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3, which is an excellent movie. If you haven't, if anybody listening hasn't seen it,
The original, right?
The original, not
Robert
the,
Shaw.
Not the John Travolta one.
Not the John Travolta remake. It, which isn't bad, by the way. It's a pretty decent movie, but the original is great, and it's like this great time capsule of New York City. It's like kind of the Warriors feel like you're getting that era of grimy shit ass New York, and it's front and center. But it's ultimately like, you know, a heist tale, a battle of wits between Robert Shaw and Walter Matthau. And it's fucking great.
Weird.
But both of those prints that I have are TV cuts. So they don't exist in any other form really, except in 16 like this. And, the Jaws one, because it's TV, what they had to do back in the day was they were going to be adding in commercials. And so they would need to have, you know, the movies be a certain length.
And so like the black thing.
The what?
The like fade to blacks things worked in.
Well, there is that, but there's also the story itself had to be a certain length. So they would like have all these filmmakers like send in all the deleted scenes and extra shots and stuff, because like say when they did all the added all the commercials into Jaws, they had 3 hour, you know, or 2 hour and 58 minutes, and they're like, we need 2 more minutes. You know, on this, so there's in that Jaws print, there's shots of like random shots of Chief Brody walking across the street, or the deleted scene where Quint is like mocking the kid playing the flute, in the music shop, and so, but it's on film, and so you know, from a collector and an archive perspective, I have a lot of respect for folks that do that. I still don't understand, like when I see a VHS. Like, this is a sealed Ghostbusters and it just sold at auction for $300,000. I'm like, who the fuck is buying a,
not,
you
know,
who
not
gives
me
a shit if it's sealed? It's like, it's still, like, what?
You know, I don't want it to be sealed because I want to watch it. Yeah. Like, I don't, like, I appreciate that people collect them in that way, but I'm not collecting things to put them on a pedestal. I'm collecting them to be like in a shelf and for other people to enjoy. And I think there's also something to be said about like, cover art is not a thing that gets paid attention to anymore. Like movie posters are barely a thing that gets paid attention to anymore. It's like the weird head amalgamation on a poster thing usually. Mm-hmm. But cover art used to be like, you know, you'd walk through fucking whatever your local video store was if you didn't have Blockbuster, which I didn't initially growing up, and be like, I'm picking it based on that. Like this is what is selling the movie to me. What is on this cover? I don't know what the hell it's about. And that's why I like also tapes, because DVDs kind of have that, but like not really. Whereas like, you know, the copy of Christine I have has like this cool red whole like border, and it has a flip open thing with like stills from the movie. So you're like, I know what I'm looking at kind of when I watch this movie. I love shit like that. And just like maintaining things that people don't value anymore, I guess. I even like that they look shitty. I like the grainy, this is what people were watching.
Yeah, I figured that has to be a part of it.
Yeah, yeah, because...
Can't get around
it. Yeah, and one, it's not always with new movies and stuff, and it depends on TVs, but you know when they look like too fucking real, or like it's like, it doesn't look right because something's not lining up correctly with what your TV settings are and whatever it was filmed on and how it's being streamed, and people look uncanny valley.
Right.
Like I don't know. I don't like that at all. VHS is just like you get what you get. I like that about just being like, there's no sayings to fuck with. This is what it looks like. Put it in, watch it. If it sounds like shit, sorry, adjust your tracking. If that doesn't work, that's it.
Blow on it, maybe. You can blow on it.
Always. I have N64 still, and
There is nothing more satisfying though than hearing that snap when you hit the button at the top of a tape and you pop it open and you see the tape, and if it's crinkled, you straighten it out or whatever, and then that snap when you just let it back and it locks in and go ch-ch-ch. There is something very,
It's
see,
true.
that's where my nostalgia is. It's all in the handling of it, the clunk of the old VCRs that you slide it in and then you slam it down,
Very
and that's
satisfying
like
sounds.
I can fix my VCR, like I can open the VCR and fix
Oh,
that shit. I
you
can't
took the
fix.
course? You took the 8-week course,
On,
the
yeah,
VCR
YouTube
repairman?
University.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like it's easy. You can fix tapes like to a point. You can't fix like a DVD that's scratched to hell or whatever.
Rotted,
I
yeah.
mean, obviously streaming's safe always until they take the thing off and then you don't have it, which like Watchmen wasn't anywhere for the first season of it for like or the season of it for a while. So I don't
Yeah,
know. And
Willow's
then
gone, and you know, well, I mean, it exists on pirate stuff, but that's where the archive comes in. I hope somebody's archiving all these streaming exclusive things, because that's what's really going to disappear whenever. And you know, Amazon decides to get out of the streaming business, or Apple, or you know, Netflix evolves into something else and is a gaming platform in 20 years, or whatever the fuck it's going to be. Those are the things that are going to be gone and like you're never going to see. So
That's a Flanagan thing that I'm like, I got to meet him at a meet and greet. I didn't meet him like personally. It was at Comic Con last year. But he signed my copy of Salem's Lot, and I was like, I think that you made the best Salem's Lot adaptation because it's Midnight Mass.
Oh, right.
And he was super cool and really nice to me.
He's a
But
monster in
yeah,
person.
he's
Want to let
terrible.
you
He sounds
know.
awful. Worst guest you've
Literally
ever
the
had.
nicest guy that I've ever met. Like, to the point where it's like, oh, you got to have like, you know, a fucking puppy bone yard or something, you know, somewhere, you know,
Where the evil
you have
goes.
kids chained up in your basement. There's got to be something about you that's
Wrong.
not just like the nicest, kindest, coolest dude in the world. So
He was so fucking nice, and I gave him a copy of the thing I do, Dungeon Crawler video with my one friend, is where we like collect VHS tapes and watch weird ones, or not that weird, but we'd done a few Stephen King ones because we did Graveyard Shift and Christine,
Nice.
and talk about them on YouTube, but we also do a magazine with like short horror stories and stuff like that in it called Castle Jackal Magazine. But I gave Mike Flanagan a copy of it that I have a short story in, and was like, so Mike Flanagan, if you're listening to this, I hope you read that and that you like my story. Anyway, the whole point of this was that I also hope you're not mad at Mike Flanagan because I torrented all of your series that are on Netflix and am putting them on VHS tapes as we speak.
On
So
VHS, yeah.
hope that's cool. I'm not selling them. It's just for me.
Are they letterboxed at the very least? Are you personally pan and scanning
I'm just doing that. Like I'm literally
them?
I got like torrent things and then I'm just recording them from my computer onto like a tape in my VCR. I did that with True Detective also off of my DVDs just 'cause like I don't know. It's fun.
Why not?
Like that HBO logo hits so hard on a VHS tape.
Yeah, that original
Excellent.
opening. Yeah, I love that music.
Well, Cam, where can where can people find you? Where can the KingCast listeners find you and all the interesting things? You definitely contain multitudes, to use a Life of Chuck reference. You do a lot of different stuff.
There's a lot of
You do.
different things cooking. Safe for work wise on Instagram, Dungeon Crawler Video, or my personal one is Beat My Machine, which is a Nine Inch Nails reference for anyone. But
Never heard
mostly
of
it's
him.
the Dungeon Crawler. No, you're not familiar. It's a
Not
pretty big
familiar.
band.
As long as nobody
but
wants to get fucked like an animal, then I'm totally cool with the music,
no,
so.
yeah, we don't even talk about Closer, the real Nine Inch Nails fans. We don't like that song.
Oh,
Um,
really?
and I'm vegan, so I don't like that music video because there's a monkey being hurt in it anyway. But Dungeon Crawler is the thing that's like a hobby, but I want to make my life because it is I want to make enough money to archive tapes and like spend my time finding videotapes, driving to estate sales, doing shit like that. So if people are listening and you like this whole VHS tape talk thing, then Dungeon Crawler Video, I said that weird, on Instagram and YouTube. And we have a Patreon where I put movies up, and that's probably allegedly, I don't know, that's not probably allowed, but you know.
Well, as long as nobody narcs, then we won't tell
you. Yeah, everyone be cool. Keep cool.
Well, Cam Damage, in your message to me, you said, I'm going to read one more thing from your letter. You said, I'm not one to toot my own horn, but I think I'd make a damn good guest. You were right about that. Thanks for reaching out. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys. Real dream come true, which sounds fake, but it really is. Thanks. Thank you.
You need to dream bigger, darling.
Nah.
We'll have to have you back. The KingCast likes recurring guest stars, so
I'd love
we'll
to,
have to have it back.
Though.
Thanks very much.
You can do a commentary or something. I think that'd be you'd be a fun person to watch movies with. So
sick. Yes. All okay.
Right. Great. All right. Thanks, Cam.
Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Cam Damage for joining me and Brez for that chat. Felt like we tried to end it a couple of times there by the end of it, but you know that's always something that happens when ultra nerdy folks talk about the things that they're passionate about. Those are the best kinds of conversations, I think, and I hope y'all enjoyed it as much as I did. Here's your friendly reminder that if you like what the show is putting down, the very best way to support it is to become a patron over at patreon.com/thekingcast. It still shocks me to say this, but you are getting over 5 years of bonus episodes at this point, going back to the grim days of lockdown as me and Wampler were figuring out this whole podcasting thing. So you'll have access to all that stuff if you've never heard it. Lots of gold there, lots of insanity, lots of chaos, yes, commentaries, all that fun stuff. You'll get access to the Discord. You'll be first in line for all the new Patreon exclusive bonus episodes coming up. Like this week, we have one of the show's favorite guests, Laura Lux, coming in to talk about The Body / Stand By Me and her relationship, her rocky relationship, actually, to this. And that's a lively chat, as you're going to get when you put Laura in a room with me and Brez. So we got that coming up at the end of this week, and plenty more where that came from. Once again, that's patreon.com/thekingcast. If it's not in the cards for you to fork over some money for yet another subscription, I totally get it. The second best way to support the show is to tell a friend, talk about us on social media, rate and review us, 5 stars only, of course, and all that jazz. So spread the word if you can't throw us a few bucks. If you can do both, well, then you are a gentleman / gentle lady and a scholar, and I definitely appreciate it. And yeah, that should be it. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Until that time, adios, folks. The KingCast is hosted by Eric Vespi, that's me, and Anthony Bresnikan. The show is produced by myself as well as Abby Goel and Tara Ansley, and is distributed by the Fangoria Podcast Network. Daniel Danger is our art director, and the show was created by me, the late, great Scott Wampler.